All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, May 5th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
Buddy, what kind of plans do you have for Cinco de Mayo?
I think you mean Cinco de Monster on FanDuel, $550 entry fee, and I will be there with bells on max entries. Nah, I'm just kidding. But Cinco de Mayo plans working all day because I'm on the system tonight. How about you?
Yeah, no real plans. You kind of got me with the Cinco de Monster thing. FanDuel just simply, I don't know, it's one of these things. Look, we make our money doing this, and I'm not here to complain about the product, but I get, it's so weird about some of these names of things and like these different slates. I don't totally understand it. Like, I just don't know who's playing these other, I mean, that's a little different because that's just like the name of a contest, whatever, so it doesn't really matter. But
you strike me more as a Cinco de Cinco guy. That's the $55 buy-in. And not as opposed to the Cinco de Monster, or just like the Cinco, maybe even just of the $5 buy-in. So,
are you just trying to like wait where I land on the Cinco scale?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay. I feel like if we're being honest with each other, I'm more of like a Cinco de Cinco guy, you know, which is a little right. bit higher variance, and you're like a Cinco guy. So, yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. All right, we got a pretty full day of baseball here for Friday. There's two games going on, right? Or probably by the time you listen, the Cubs and Yankees will have already gotten started. And then there's a 6 o'clock game as well. So we're really not going to focus on those. We'll focus on the main slate for both FanDuel and DraftKings today. And there's a ton of this to discuss here, because considering that, one, whenever you have a game in Coors, that kind of, I don't know, that drives the narrative about putting lineups in, I would say.
On the big tournament lineups, especially, your eye immediately goes to, can I find a cheap pitcher to build around? And can I even do that for cash games? Can I get away with it?
Yeah, and then there are, I would say, 4 to 5 quality arms, each with their own question marks, which we'll kind of dive into varying levels of what you would consider safe, and we can kind of dive into if the early season returns match what we can sort of expect in reality from them going forward. It's always hard this time of year. Well, it's not hard necessarily, but it's an interesting thing to look at this time of year about sample sizes and decide if what we're seeing from a pitcher or pitchers is the real thing, and this is what we can expect from them going forward. If it's just sample size issues where they've sort of run bad, if there's somewhere in between, if they made changes. So we'll get into that with some of these guys. So I guess the main pitchers that I think most people will focus on today, and I'm strictly from this perspective speaking about cash games. With tournaments, it's a different animal, especially when you have a Coors game, just because if you're looking to save, there are lots of different ways. I will say, on a day like today, with their there's probably 6 well above average arms going. 2 we can probably knock out, but it's hard for me to imagine that one of these like 6 guys isn't in some kind of winning lineup simply because the pedigree. But we can go kind of down the list. So the first guy is Yu Darvish. Darvish faces I'm putting him first mostly because he's most expensive, and we have him for the most raw points, just a tick above Strasburg. It's very close. He's coming at 10-6 on FanDuel. Darvish faces Seattle. He's a guy that's been a huge strikeout guy in the past, but, I mean, you looked at his numbers today before we jumped on. What are your thoughts here on Darvish and how his early season numbers sort of compare to what he's done historically and what we maybe can expect from him?
Yeah, I think Darvish is a great place to start today. He's going to be kind of exemplary of a lot of the guys that we're going to look at today, and that this season returns have not matched his career numbers. So this year he's averaging 9.5 Ks per 9 as opposed to his career rate of 11.2 per 9. Now, Darvish is quite a bit older than maybe some people realize. He's only been in the majors for 5 years, but since he came overseas to join the majors, he's just older than most people that have been pitching at his level for 5 years. So at 30 years old, you know, the dip in K per 9 down to 9.5 is not something that we can ignore in its entirety, but I think there's probably more to it than just, you know, looking at that and writing him off. Dave Cameron over at Fangraphs has done a great article on this that I always reference when these sorts of situations come up, which basically say that we never want to trust, even up to the halfway point in the season, we don't want to rely more on this season's stats than we do for a kind of the baseline underlying projections that they normally use. And so that's like Steamer, Zips, other qualified programs that will help you figure out kind of how a guy's going to perform over the course of an entire season. So with Darvish, yeah, we don't love to see, I mean, we'd obviously like for him to just be performing at the level that he had been, but I'm not going to be overly concerned by just a 2K per 9 dip after just 6 starts this year.
Yeah, I mean, the matchup is not great in that they have the Mariners have a couple bats in the middle of that lineup that can do damage to you. They will, I guess they maybe throw Dyson at the top of the lineup tonight. They've been sort of shifting around who's hitting leadoff. They've been throwing Ben Gamble in there at times. They are a team that will play They'll play platoons slightly more and more the top of the order. Their 3-4-5 is pretty locked in. Darvish, one number that kind of jumps out for me for Darvish is his outside of the zone swinging strike rate has kind of dipped this year. And basically what that means is he's getting less guys to chase. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like the guys aren't chasing out of the zone. And for a guy like him that has sort of like crazy movement kind of stuff. And there actually was an awesome video. I think it was actually also on Fangraphs where they had done this this video on Darvish where his motion was just absolutely repeatable for each pitch he threw. Like you could not tell from arm angle and where he was coming out. I saw that
when he first came over. Yeah.
It was like this, and it was just like this overlay of pitches, and it was like, oh my man, this guy just does the exact same thing. So his thing is, yeah, he has velocity, but he also has just crazy movement on it where he can just get guys to chase. Now, the problem here is if you're not getting guys to chase, then those all become walks, right? I mean, like in the aggregate, not like on a not necessarily on a, like a plate per plate or plate appearance by plate appearance point of view there. But if that number continues to drop for him, then maybe the walks do stay in that range and you are a little bit concerned. So it's close on him. He's expensive. He does, like I said, he is a money line favorite. It's not huge in this case. It's only -122, which is pretty low for a guy in his price tier. For like ace level, you kind of want to be in that like at least -150 range. I'm sort of just ballparking that. Like I don't know exactly what the
and that's simply because of the distribution on points, right? For if you get a win or if you don't get a win. So that's kind of why we're keying in on that there.
So he's fine. There is strikeout upside. Like I said, I think there's enough little things to be concerned here. Strasburg is 200 less on FanDuel at least. I'll check out their pricing on DraftKings as I kind of talk here. But do you see them as comparable? Like this, has Strasburg had his own? Strasburg has had some of his own kind of sample size stuff here. They're so close. He's 600 less on DraftKings. They're so close here in terms of just projected points. Is it worth it just to pay down here for Strasburg against Philly? Probably a better matchup at least.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to always keep in mind when you're looking at DFS pitchers is just whether a guy's pitching in the American or National League, because that one black hole in the lineup at the pitcher spot just does make a huge deal. And this season, the Phillies have been a tremendous matchup. The 24% K percentage against right-handed pitching is good for 7th in the league. They just are just legit from top to bottom, a great matchup. The Mariners, on the other hand, are just 21%, which lands them at about 14th place in the majors. You know, there's a bunch of teams clustered there, but kind of middle of the pack. I think Strasburg objectively has the better matchup. And I think when you look at him, you'd almost expect his money line to be higher as well. But Nick Pivetta pitching for the Phillies today, not a name a lot of people will recognize. He is a real guy, though. Like, he's not just one of these call-ups who we can expect to go in and get rocked. And so I think that that's probably playing into his money line a little bit. But I don't know, man. With a gun to my head, I just feel like with Strasburg and the fact that you can get some savings on him, and frankly, I think the pedigree is just as strong on Strasburg historically. I mean, yeah, the K per nine is down a little bit, but so are the walks per nine.
The K per nine is not down a little bit. It's down 3 strikeouts per nine. Like, he's down from 11.15 to 7.97.
Yeah, and Darvish is now 2 per nine. You know, like, I think both of them are having their own struggles. And I was saying in comparison to Darvish, his K rate is down a little bit lower. I think Strasburg, just the whole profile on him. I think also if you're just looking from a high floor perspective, the fact that Strasburg walks such fewer batters than Darvish does, and the fact that he still does maintain a good K rate and the better matchup, I think you're just going to see him land in a higher ownership bracket for cash games tonight.
Yeah, I'm just that strikeout number, that dip in K per nine is, I don't know, for some reason it stands out more to me than it does for Darvish, simply because Darvish was still at least like more than a K per inning. He's down to less than a K per inning. Maybe he's sacrificed some Ks to get walks or to reduce the walk rate. He is pitching different this year, right? Like, so he started this year by no longer pitching out of the windup, simply pitching out of the stretch. That's a pretty big change for a guy, right? Like, so, and we have a sample size of his whole entire career pitching to start the game whenever someone's not on base out of the windup. And now he's just simply not doing that anymore. It's that kind of like fundamental shift in approach that has me actually a little bit concerned. Just not concerned for him as an overall pitcher. He's been good. Like, XFIP is 3.29, and maybe he's just working to induce more contact. Maybe it's just 35 innings, and we're going to see this kind of just tick back up. And these are
Some matchup issues there too. You know, two of his five starts this season against the Mets and Braves, who are both bottom five in the majors in terms of striking out against right-handed pitching. So, you know, if that accounts for 13 of his innings, that's a big deal, right? And Marlins also a bottom 10 team. And of course, the Phillies are a great matchup. He's faced them twice. I don't know, man. I think this just, what it really shines a light on is the absurdity of focusing on 35 innings versus a career body of work, probably, because, you know, his strikeout numbers were also excellent until basically the Mets game in his last start, where he only struck out two guys, which was 2.5 Ks per nine. So, you know, the prior three starts, he was double digits K per nine. I don't know. I really like Strasburg tonight. And I think talking yourself out of him, or, you know, and in our system, it's a trustless system, right? The numbers go in and the numbers tell us what they want. So, you know, if the system says Darvish, I'm willing to go with it. I think for those of you who are at home making your lineup sort of by hand, just don't get too dissuaded when you see a seven starting Strasburg's K per nine right now.
And the next price tier down from those two guys, not too far down, but just a tick, is Archer and Maeda. So Archer is a guy, walks her up a little bit. He's getting to face a Toronto team that their struggles have been pretty well documented so far this year. They have, you know, losing Encarnacion, that Donaldson's on the shelf, a year older on Bautista, and then just a sort of mishmash of guys. And they added Kendrys Morales, but that's still a huge downgrade from Edwin Encarnacion. I want to trust Archer here on the K upside. I like the price a lot, especially if you're starting to look at cores and wanting to start putting at least a few of those bats. It's going to be tough to get a lot of them in with these prices, even a sub 10K salary on Archer. But I'm a little concerned that, one, his ability to go long in games because of the walks, and I'm also just, I don't know, I find myself distrustful of Chris Archer. Maybe I spent too many times watching Chris Archer performances where I've rostered him and then just sitting there with just biting my nails, wondering why he continues to like work out of the zone, or how we just ran that 0-2 count to a 3-2 count again. How many times are we going to go from 0-2 to 3-2 before I just, I don't know, commit some kind of crime or
Dude,
just
well
do
that's
something.
Your metric. I don't know how you can possibly recommend you Darvish over Chris Archer. Darvish is like this, and he's just slower to the mound. Like, I don't know.
Watching absolutely forever
for DFS purposes is already bad for your health. Watching you Darvish is just like a particular kind of torture that I don't normally subject myself to.
Archer Archer falls into that category too, and don't even get me started because Maeda's next, and he's actually the king of that.
We kind of buried the lead on that.
Sure. Right. Anyway, what are your thoughts on Archer?
Yeah, no, I like Archer. I think that, you know, in this case, it's kind of nice because we already have two games that he's gone up against Toronto this season. And in both of those games, he was very solid. You know, 5Ks in one and 7.1 innings. Not ideal, but the other one was a really good start. 7 2/3 with 8Ks and just 2 earned runs allowed. Both of those were good for 38 and 45 fantasy points, respectively. And he didn't get a win in either of those. So, you know, that's just a run support issue, right? So I think that, he makes for a very, very good play tonight. I think that on DraftKings in particular, where you're going to be rostering two pitchers and the savings matters a little bit more, I think you'll see him maybe as an every lineup guy for us. I returns are still very early there, and you know there's some really cheap value that we might want to key in on. But no, I think Archer is a really, really excellent play.
Archer right now is 100%. I'm saying 100% because when you calculate optimal lineups for both sites, it'll give you the percentage that player is in a lineup. He's in 100% of lineups for both sites right now. Look, this is noon Eastern time on Friday, so things change. Things like this, I know the system pretty well. You could say like the back of my hand if you've ever heard that term before. Have you heard that term before?
No, I don't get it.
It's like you look at the back of your hand a lot. I'll tell you about it off air, but it's actually a pretty
famous thing. You know the system like a long-term lover, you know, like someone who, what, why are you laughing? I didn't laugh at your stupid hand analogy. I'm just trying to make my own one to paint a more clear picture.
Archer's in 100% of lineups right now. At his price point, it's very rare that kind of thing changes, especially considering there's not too much of a decrease in expectation, according to our system, after Darvish and Strasburg. So it's not like you are basically that saying you're not getting a whole lot more for paying up into that next level.
Yeah, you're not really getting away with anything by paying 2,000 for whatever, 1.5 more points, right?
The ballpark helps him for sure. It's much better to pitch in Tampa Bay than it is, like let's say, just in Toronto if we're just going by matchup. Sure. Right. So you do decrease run expectation just by ball staying in the park there more. I do like Archer here. I would feel it's just one of those things where one of the problems with baseball is because you can talk yourself into just feeling a certain way about a play. We hear this all the time from users where, it doesn't feel good. Well, no, DFS will one. It necessarily shouldn't feel good. And the nights where it does feel good, believe me, it's feeling good for everybody. And so
this
no one's having
feel good.
Yeah, no. It sounds like the doctor. I'm like that.
Exactly. The DFS doctor. I did quote unquote dentist yesterday. I heard a lot of that action. Why don't we give you a little numbing agent for this one? I feel like I want to give the users a little bit of a numbing agent before. Actually, this is a good transition before we get to our next selection, which is Kentamata. Kentamata, at least I feel like the names we've put out there so far, people are like nodding their heads and they're like, okay, Scherzer, Darvish, I've heard of those guys. Archer, okay. Tell people why they should at least consider Kentamata for tonight.
Well, he's a funny one because he has a great matchup. So San Diego is still... They were a sort of a bottom feeding team last year, and I know some has been made. You know, they added Margot to the top of the lineup. They are getting a whole season out of Schimpf now. That's true. And Myers is a real guy in the middle of the lineup, and Margot is real too. While those things are true, the Padres still stink, right? Oh, so like yeah. The thing was last year they were historically bad, right? Now they're just bad.
Now they're literally like a bottom five to bottom three team in the major.
Like last year they were basically a Triple A team that had Myers in the middle of the lineup. I'm probably forgetting someone on that team, but essentially they were a minor league team for like the Red Sox minor league team, but it was actually playing in the majors or something like that.
It might have actually been the Red Sox old minor league team from the Adrian Gonzalez trade,
and the Drew Pryor, and it ended up being the Pomeranz trade at the end of the year too. Yeah, but so they went from being just this team that you could basically target almost any pitcher any night.
When they were at home, that was the case. Like if they were right. playing a home game, it was just a lock and load situation.
And now they're just pretty bad, but just do have a couple names. So Maeda, you know, he's a guy that his numbers to start the year, there's one number that looks really bad, 6.58 ERA. Everything else about his numbers
that's a pretty bad sounding number.
No, that's real good. No, excuse me, that's real bad. Don't get me wrong. That's bad. And I'm actually hoping that that's what keeps people away from playing him because all of his other numbers are kind of great. Like, so he's striking out more batters this year. He's more than a K in inning guy. He's actually reduced the walks. So he's right around 2 walks per 9. He's been running pretty bad on the home run. So he's more than doubled his home run per 9. I want to believe that that's something that will sort of regress to his mean. There could be another change that he's made, that he's just maybe grouping more fastballs. His other numbers don't suggest that kind of thing. Like he just
we've only got a short track record for him, the one season. So like it's hard to say where he's going to normalize. But the thing is, you know, and this is where XFIP is a really, really valuable tool. So we talk about XFIP a lot. I don't know how often we've unpacked it, but basically XFIP accounts for a number of fielder independent pitching factors. And so, you know, strikeouts per 9, walks per 9, but it also keys in on one thing that FIP doesn't. So FIP is just regular fielder independent pitching, which is the home run to fly ball rate. Right. What basically studies have shown is that pitchers' home run to fly ball rate will tend to normalize over the course of their careers. And we can get an established baseline, you know, based on just what's happened in the past. So Maeda last season was around 12% home run to fly ball ratio, which is about normal. That's you know, roughly league average. This year it's up to 20%. And there's just in no scenario is a guy who has made his pedigree, you know, 44% ground ball rate for his career, going to give up 20% home runs on every fly ball he gives up. So if you cut that number in half, all of a sudden you basically, and home runs to fly balls are, it's such a binary outcome, like getting all the runners on base and the batter to score versus getting another out are two such different things that it introduces so much variance this early in the season. I wouldn't sweat the ERA whatsoever. I think last year's baseline is still what we want to work off of. And if the prices and people's expectations are based on, you know, a 5-game sample, then more power to them. But yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on here.
Yeah, no, I think you're getting more of that savings on FanDuel than you are DraftKings. So on DraftKings, I don't know if they just work their algorithm a little different with price. We know it's clear they work their algorithms different with pricing. He's actually more expensive than Archer over on DraftKings, but on FanDuel he's $1,200 less. And this is where we say, you know, we said this before on the pod for really all sports, is when you see big price differences between guys on one site to the other, you can kind of ask yourself who made the mistake, right? Did DraftKings make the mistake? Yeah. Is the truth, or did FanDuel make the mistake? Is the truth somewhere in the middle? The truth is probably somewhere in the middle with more of the mistake on the FanDuel side. At 8,400, he is just the kind of guy that you would love to roster to be able to fit in some more just high-value bats. I love that the Padres are striking out 26% of the time versus righties this year, most in the majors. So, again, they are still not a good team. The park is about as good as you can get in terms of just reducing power just basically in all directions. So I love Maeda here. I'm not sure he's the cash game play. And I know that if he is the cash game play for us, we're going to hear about it from some people.
I think there's so many big names going tonight, and they're all good plays from my perspective. And I think they're all good plays for different reasons. I don't, like I mentioned earlier, don't really concern myself too deeply with ace pedigree type guys and a 5 or 6 game start sample to start this season. I think that you can still get, you know, just relatively high floor exposure to them. And with Maeda, you're going to be out on a limb. Well, yeah, all these factors are great. And I think your point about the pricing algorithms on the two sites was spot on. What it seems to me is that DraftKings is probably maybe overcompensating for park factor here. They were kind of ahead of the curve on that, but there's a chance they could have overextended. And yeah, Petco's a great place to pitch, but it's not like it doesn't change your expectation by 15 or 20%, right? It's we know from looking deeply into these things, it's more like 4 to 7%. And so, yeah, just that price looks like an overreach. But yeah, big tournament purposes, Meta is an awesome play tonight.
If you put in, so the top lineup on FanDuel for us right now is somewhere around 130.75, and you're gonna understand why I say the 0.75 here in a second. Projected points with Archer. If you lock Meta in, you're losing 0.25 in expectation, which is to say it's the same lineup, right? Like people also struggle with this idea. It's like, oh, that was lineup number 20. You're like, homie, that's the same lineup, you know? Like in terms of projected points, it's the exact same lineup. Now, it's going to look a little different, and it's going to have some other guys, and the, you know, ahem, swings in baseball are more wild than most other sports. But the difference between lineup one and lineup 20 with these two different guys, when the difference is like, you know, less than 0.5% or something like that, it's just the same, right? And so
right.
you are
Unless
not
you have
really.
an eye as discerning as mine, because I can kind of tell the difference.
That's my bad. You can tell the difference.
But the average user out there, yeah, just trust the system, man.
That's why we stick you in chat and you tell everyone what lineup you're running, because I know you can tell the difference. But for me personally, who's going to run multiple cash game lines, especially on a night like tonight, like this is the kind of the perfect night to do it to mix up your cash game and put them in tournaments as well, and sort of spread your just sort of spread some of these arms across, because the bats are going to be relatively the same, which we're going to get to in a minute. Like what you'll notice is, even though the pitchers might change and the point expectation only changes by like less than a point or maybe a little bit more over the course of, you know, 50 or 100 lineups, the bats stay relatively static. So, and that's because, and we can transition there to when you get a game in Coors, you are just getting, and tonight's actually more than usual, but you are just getting so many more implied runs in this game than you are really in any other game on the slate. Now, you take one good hitter's park out of the mix when you move Arizona into Colorado. So that one, that helps there. But you also have a couple of other just good parks sort of off the table here because the teams are on the road, and you have a bunch of just decent arms. So we mentioned four there. I mentioned guys like Keuchel is also pitching. We didn't really talk about him, but just because he just didn't really. He didn't really reach the same tier as the guys that we mentioned above, but I can run off a pretty nice list of above average arms that are going tonight. Hendricks, Salazar, Pineda, Keuchel, Liriano to some degree. Eduardo Rodriguez has been pretty good this year. Wade Miley's actually been kind of good this year. Fulmer, and then the list kind of starts dropping off after those names. But that's a
Or
pretty
then you
long
get kind
list.
of like not even major league quality pitchers. And so the consolidation of bats is going to be pretty prevalent. And that's actually nice because I think you kind of alluded to this, but we're still getting the high floor from getting the best possible matchups for our hitters. But for big tournaments, we also get really high ceiling because, you know, having guys obviously batting around each other in the lineup against bad pitchers means that if they all happen to go off, then we're all of a sudden sitting atop of GPP. And that's a nice spot to be.
And they also did us a Major League did us a huge disservice today by sticking Matt Cain and Bronson
Oh,
Arroyo
give
at
me a break.
640. I know. I was like,
Come on.
I was licking my chops, as you will say. I'm
Oh,
actually
yeah.
I'm pulling on all the terms today.
Considerable chops to lick there, too. I mean,
Huge chops. Huge
you
chops.
get started at 5 p.m., you might not make them before
I looked
lock.
at that last night. I looked at it last night and I said, oh, nice. Cain and Arroyo. These picks are going to be easy. And then I looked at and I just saw the 640 start time, which I never understand why teams do this, but there has to be some good reason to start. I guess that's 5:40 Cincinnati time. I'm not exactly
Well, you
sure,
remember when
but
I think it was the White Sox, they had that sponsorship deal with 7-Eleven, and then this was like in the pre-Twitter era though, and so they had the 7-Eleven thing, and people just made fun of them constantly. And I just have to feel like if that happened during the Twitter era, it would have been a lot of delete your account leveled at the Chicago White Sox, because just starting your games at 7-Eleven to sponsor 7-Eleven is just so cheesy. But yeah, no, I can't think of a great reason to start your game at 6:40.
So
Doesn't
anyway,
make
we
a ton
missed
of
those
sense.
two gas cans, and which would have been a nice in Cincinnati, which is another about as good a park as you can play in terms of power outside of
She's
Coors.
leaving, Doug. She's not coming back. So let's focus on what we can do. You know, what we can change. Who can we look at tonight?
I do like to live in the oh, if only in the if
Ifs
only
and buts
category.
category.
Yeah. So anyway, Coors. So we have Marquez and Greinke right now. It's one of those. It's almost like some of the pricing algorithms also got a little messed up here with. It's Coors, but it's Greinke, and so you get the Colorado bats actually still coming pretty cheap. So guys like Cargo, I'm speaking. This is mostly on FanDuel I'm speaking here, although it's sort of the same thing on DraftKings. guy like Cargo, 3,700. Blackman, 4,500. Still strikes me as a bargain. Arenado's sort of like in that fours range. Those guys, yeah, he's 48. He's a little higher. Mostly Cargo, Para, and Blackman, the lefties coming against Greinke. How much does Greinke being like actually a good pitcher, or a decent pitcher, does it even out some of the effects you get on Coors? Like, can we still play these Coors bats knowing that we're getting, you know, we're getting an above average arm going against them?
I think we can, yeah. I mean, Greinke, he's had actually 20 starts in Coors over the course of his career and a 4.1 ERA during that time. So basically, which is to say Greinke is effectively an average pitcher when he heads into Coors. And, you know, Greinke's had a very up and down career, so you can't really take all that together. But, you know, he's pitched quite a bit in the West. And I think that we just don't want to get too worried about it. I mean, Greinke's still going to strike guys out. But the thing about Greinke is he stays around the plate, and that additional control can be as much of a curse as it is a blessing for a guy like Greinke and Coors, because, you know, the fly ball outs that he's been able to rely on and other stops in his career, like in LA in particular and in Kansas City to a lesser degree, just don't really come in Coors. You know, you just make one mistake here and there and all of a sudden balls are in the seats. So yeah, I don't mind. Like, it's interesting because creating these models are on our own, we've found how difficult it is to weight these kind of counterbalancing factors. And so, you know, it's very easy just to have a paint it with a broad brush, right, and say like, oh, well, it's the park factors, so, you know, increase everybody by X percent. Well, what happens when Clayton Kershaw shows up, right? Now, there are some outlier pitchers like Kershaw who we probably wouldn't stack against even in Coors, but Greinke's just not on that level for me. The fact that he stays around the plate and that he's not that ace caliber that can just shut people down, I'm happy stacking against him if they're going to give us a discount on those Rockies guys.
He has been good this year. He's striking at around 10 per nine. He's limited the walks a little bit to start the season. He's less than 2 walks per nine, which is that's probably a welcome sign for the Diamondbacks because he really struggled with the strikeout last year. I don't know if these numbers for him are going to be sustainable. They're way above his career numbers. So there's a chance you just see.
Oh, I'm not getting carried away. No, I don't think you can trust this year's 10 Ks per nine. It's the same discussion we had in the pitcher section. Like, no, just don't assume that you're going to get anything like that. He's pitched against the Padres twice, San Francisco. Like, I'm definitely not going to go head over heels here.
I am wondering how much that name on the mound does keep people away from the Colorado bats today. It could, just because it doesn't look like as good of a matchup. I will say they are right now right around 5.3 implied runs. That is the highest. They're tied with the Diamondbacks. Now, the Diamondbacks are also, same implied runs, significantly more expensive. They have a better matchup against Marquez, yeah. So that makes a lot of sense
to now, say the least. Yeah.
well, right, but think about it though. They have it though. Vegas has them as just both teams putting up the same amount of runs, right? So, which is odd. I mean, Marquez, he's only pitched 10 innings this year, so never mind. But it would strike me on the surface, like if I were to do like the dumb guess the lines game, there's no way I would have had these teams both for the same amount of implied runs just on the pitching matchup, if that makes sense. I don't know if maybe if I'm just
Vegas has this as a pick 'em.
I mean, right. Maybe I'm just misevaluating Marquez, or I just don't understand.
You might be misevaluating how good of a lineup the Rockies have. Like, I think that's probably more it. I mean, if Vegas is saying that, obviously Vegas doesn't think these two pitchers are equal, so it's just saying the Rockies have a better lineup, and I don't think that's extremely controversial, especially in Coors.
No, but the Diamondbacks are significantly more expensive. I would say almost like 10 to 15% more expensive across the board, just with guys like Goldschmidt, Peralta, Pollock, Lamb. All these guys are mid fours and higher prices. It's almost too much to pay. It's not too much to pay in a tournament if you're stacking them all together and you're just kind of going for it and maybe punting some other positions. For cash games, you need a ton to go right out of that game for them to consider across the board paying off these prices. The pricing has, it's not like totally gone like just through the roof where you can't consider, but man, right now you run a lineup and you're not getting any of those guys in the lineups, and I get why. Like, so for instance, you get Pollock. I'll just put up some guys next to each other. You have Pollock hitting leadoff for the Diamondbacks. He's 4,900 on FanDuel, and you have Blackman at 4,500 against Greinke. Straight up, would you take Blackman or Pollock?
Oh, I'd take Blackman for sure. I mean, I think in a case like this, it's very easy. Let's just put it this way. Vegas has a lot more at stake in getting this line correct than FanDuel or DraftKings does in terms of getting their pricing correct. FanDuel and DraftKings also have other incentives like ownership percentages and so on that Vegas doesn't have to concern itself with. I think your point is well made, and it's pretty clear to me that the error in the market here, the market inefficiency, is on the side of the DFS operators and not on Vegas. So yeah, I'm all in on the Rockies tonight, and I probably won't wind up playing any Diamondbacks outside of the odd tournament here and there.
Yeah, you have the same exact thing with Peralta and Cargo. Peralta's 300 more, and we have Cargo projected for almost 1.5 more points. I mean, those are significant differences. So, this is not to say that you can't play these Diamondbacks guys. I think you can, and people will. And look, it could make sense. This is baseball, after all. This is one of those scenarios where you say to yourself, you know, if you played the game out 100 times, would I be getting value on these guys every time? Probably not. Now baseball can really kind of F with your mind like this, because like, it will happen for you, and usually happens in big ways. Like, you know, home runs are worth, you know, so many more points than just a single or just doing nothing, right? Like, you can just swing so wildly in just your variance or standard deviations and stuff like that. So you can talk yourself in and out of plays, and you can talk yourself into, oh yeah, it was definitely right playing all those Diamondbacks guys going in, because they put up a lot of runs against them. It's just one of those things where played all out, like, in the aggregate, it probably doesn't make sense all the time at these prices, but people will do it anyway, and I just might be on the Diamondbacks fade after that game, which is going to be hard to completely load up on, considering the other pitchers that we mentioned before. Where else can we look maybe for some cheaper stacks?
Sure. I think the system is appropriately keying in on the Orioles tonight. The Orioles, we've talked about this many times, but in spite of being kind of righty heavy, they actually are quite a bit better against right-handed pitching. And that's based on guys like Adam Jones, who's one of the most extreme reverse platoon split guys of our generation, I feel like. And they're also very excellent because they move guys like Seth Smith, who's another just a standard platoon guy, but he's quite terrible against left-handed pitching, but excellent against righties. And so he'll be at the top of the lineup again. Machado's effective against right-handed pitching, Trumbo as well. And of course, Chris Davis is quite a bit better against righties as well. So you get all these different Baltimore pieces that you can kind of mix and match. And you get a phenomenal world-class matchup for opposing hitters in Miguel Gonzalez. This guy has kind of just never been good. And in the old category of, how does he keep getting to just roll out into the majors and do the same bad stuff year after year? I'm not totally sure, but he's not fooling anyone this season. Boy, 5.7 Ks per nine, giving up tons of fly balls, and those actually haven't even translated to nearly as many home runs as you might expect. I think that could turn around tonight, and I think especially in those cheaper areas, particularly Seth Smith, you can get a high floor and high upside, and I'm pretty excited to roll multiple Orioles in both cash games and big tournaments.
Yeah, it's interesting with Smith, because we saw this last night, where the concern with Smith sometimes at the top of the lineup is, in close games, he's going to get platooned out if the other team is just bringing in a, you know, lefty specialist to just, because they don't want him to play, and then they'll just, you know, bat Ricard, or they'll pinch hit for him in some way. Now, that doesn't happen, though, like in games like last night, where the game is just kind of getting out of hand, and they're up by 5 runs, and then Seth Smith just stays in the game, and now you're actually really looking at huge upside. He was great last night. A lot of people played him. I suspect they'll go that direction again with him, just because he's just kind of the perfect cheap guy that you can play. But in games where the Orioles are just winning, and the game is out of hand or whatever, teams aren't just going to finagle their bullpen to match up with a guy like him. So then you just get him for the whole game. That's because with Smith, that's really your only concern, is him just seeing 3 plate appearances instead of 5, right?
But there's a big difference, I think, because now, like, you picture Seth Smith of the old days when he would be in a platoon situation, because he's always been a platoon player. But he would often come in and bat like 4th or 5th, and he would still kind of be a value. But that would really erode his plate appearances, because oftentimes the game script plays out in such a way that if you bat 4th or 5th, you're not getting your 4th plate appearance until like the late 7th, you know, 8th inning, somewhere in that range. When you're batting leadoff, oftentimes that 4th plate appearance just comes before the other team is ready to start doing the old platoon dance. And so I think that actually benefits him quite a great deal, that Baltimore is willing to bite the bullet, just bat him leadoff against right-handed pitching. Because if you actually look up and down his game log, like the Seth Smith of old, he would frequently get games with just 3 plate appearances out of the leadoff slot. He's only got, the last time he had a game like that was April 24th. So it's been a nice long stretch now where he's getting 4 more plate appearances, and that just increases his overall safety quite a bit.
I do think we kind of calculate tournament value based on the team's entire lineup. So just overall team value. So, you know, based on price and how much the team is supposed to put up, just in general, you know, which teams are you getting the most value out of? We have that as a metric, and I'm actually hoping to get
$1.
We don't have that up on the site now, but we're hoping to get that up there relatively soon, just for people to look at and say, like, sort of these are the teams that just sort of stack up pretty well. I haven't looked at it completely yet, but I suspect that Baltimore is probably the highest on the list. Boston might be up there as well. They're just another team that's not too terribly expensive, just in a decent matchup tonight. I don't know if you like Boston here, or if you have another team that we can throw out. I have a couple more, but I don't know if you have another one.
No, I was looking at Boston. I think for Boston, you know, it's kind of tricky, because I think they're kind of a poor man's Rockies tonight, and that the Rockies are just generally, they're similarly priced, but the Rockies just have a better situation going up in Coors. But the Red Sox, I think, are very interesting for big tournament purposes or for one-offs for cash games. And that's mostly because of Phil Hughes. You know, I've talked about this many times on the podcast, but I really love stacking against guys like Hughes. Low strikeout, great control guys who also give up a lot of fly balls. Hughes, for his career, is just 34% ground ball percentage. And that's just great if you want to just try to pile up a lot of runs in a hurry. And, of course, the Red Sox have a lot of guys that can do just that. So the Red Sox, to me, in a phenomenal spot tonight.
Now, I think they're even fine just for more than one-offs. I could see playing a couple of these guys. The prices have come down a little bit, especially if they continue to hit Pedroia leadoff. They've been sort of moving that leadoff position around. They hit Bogarts there for a little bit. Pedroia has hit leadoff the last couple games. He actually went yard last night. I don't know if that kind of thing affects managerial decisions about where a guy should bat, but it sure can't hurt, I would say. So he hits a home run last night. And then baseball is one of those things, like you're getting, so Benintendi started off as a pretty popular play to start the year. He was coming pretty cheap. The price has climbed up a little bit. Though, if he's hitting second in this lineup, a team that's projected right around five runs, I still think he's a great deal at 3,800 on FanDuel. And he's one of these things where baseball can just totally kill you. Last night, he's up second and third, two outs, somewhere like the bottom of the eighth. And he just ripped the ball to right, and it missed a home run by a foot and a half, right? So he goes from a zero day he went from 0 points, which he had. That was like a 24-point swing or something like that. One, like as Ricard just kind of dives to catch the ball and he doesn't, and the inning's over. So this is where baseball, sometimes it kind of pays to watch the games because you say, oh man, that was close and this is still a good play. Like he's not struggling. It just missed it by a couple inches. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say on Pedroia, it's important to note with him, the reason he's such a good value right now is because he's been batting six so much. Bogarts has been leading off quite a number of these games and Pedroia is kind of, you know, his value winds up dwindling because he's just getting fewer plate appearances. On the odd night where Pedroia does peak up to the top of the lineup, he's going to be a cash game staple for us. So, you know, if you're not a member of DFSR, dfsr.com/MLB for a free 3-day trial, then keep an eye out on that because he'll go from being like not owned at all in cash games to being a 25 or 30% start just based on whether he's leading off or batting sixth.
Just to finish off here real quick before we get out of here, I do think Miami's in a pretty good spot here tonight. They have a couple guys at the top of the lineup. They're facing Rafael Montero. If you take a look at Montero's numbers, he has not pitched many innings, although it doesn't kind of matter because he's walking somewhere
around
11.
Ask your kids to leave the room. You don't want your kids to see this.
Somewhere around 11 batters per nine. He is awful. So you get a pretty steep drop-off in the Marlins lineup after the top five, I would say. So you're not. It's a little hard to stack this team, and it's especially hard to stack National League teams because you get that pitcher spot, and that just does kind of muddy up the works when you're looking, even if you're looking at like wraparound stacks, because you can do that every once in a while with the American League teams. If you get a guy, you go like 9-1-2, that actually can compound on itself pretty nicely for tournaments. It's a little harder to do that in the National League because you get that basically automatic out, and then Hecuveri is kind of also an automatic out at the bottom line, so they have a couple. But the top of that lineup, in Yelich, Stanton, Boer, Prado, and Gordon, that does strike me as a team in a pretty good spot. I wouldn't go overboard on it, and I do think people tend to go overboard sometimes on these teams because they forget the plate appearance expectation greatly diminishes when you have those other total zeros at the bottom of the lineup. I see this a lot of times. People say, I love this team and this team, and I'll say, and it's usually National League teams, I'll say, yeah, the top five are really good, but you got to remember, the bottom four affect the top five's ability to get to the plate more. People really do not factor that in. Who does factor that in is Vegas, and this is why you see these teams just night after night projected for many fewer runs than their American League cohorts, because that pitcher spot and some of those bottom of the order guys do matter. That being said, I do like the top five of the Marlins guys. Okay, I think that's it for us today. A lot to dissect here, a lot of pitching choices to make. I don't envy us having to do it later or you out there having to do it because the pitching is all pretty close tonight. And also the decision about what you do with Coors is going to be probably the driving piece of narrative for from now until 7 o'clock lock. If you want to get a free 3-day trial to our projection system that informs most of what we talked about here, dfsr.com/MLB, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You can head over to the chat room, James Ryer and our good buddy Chris, who does a lot of our baseball content as well. One of us is almost always in the chat room there, talking, answering questions, kind of just, you know, giving our thoughts for the night. So head over there. You can also ask how the system's been doing. People will be honest with you. We're proud of what we've done here. We think you'll like the product too. dfsr.com/MLB. Buddy, enjoy your Friday of baseball, your weekend of baseball. Talk to you again next week.
Can't wait, man.